The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
So James Harden's, look, had so many. It's not just that in the regular season he performs at MVP level by the numbers, and in the postseason he performs at all-star level by the numbers, meaning there's a drop-off in his performance. You know, unlike people like, oh, he's the greatest scorer one-on-one. Shut up. Michael Jordan had the greatest regular season numbers of all time, and in the playoffs got better, elevated. Kobe Bryant remained the same dude, playoff and regular seasons, among the all-time greats. LeBron, over time, learned to elevate. This dude, James Harden, has choked. Not only do the numbers go down, but the eyeball test. Big moments. Dribbles out of bounds. Jumps under Draymond Green's legs, looking for a call instead of trying to hit the shot. Misses the shot, of course. There's so many moments like that for James Harden. And here he was in a Game 7 with storylines everywhere you look. D'Antoni's job on the line. Russell Westbrook had been traded for Chris Paul. Chris Paul is talking about who's built for this after the game, that he had a good game and the Thunder won. Doesn't mention Westbrook. Doesn't mention Harden. Obviously, they were beefing or Chris Paul would still be there. Mentions Damian Lillard. So James Harden has Lu Dort put on him. Lu Dort's a 20-year-old undrafted rookie. And Lu Dort's eating his lunch, shutting James Harden down and giving him that work on the offensive end, 30 points. How does an undrafted 20-year-old drop 30 while completely humiliating you defensively? How does that happen to an MVP-caliber player? That was about to be the nail another nail in James Harden's postseason reputation coffin. And that was a pretty good extension of that metaphor. You see what I did? And James Harden, at the last moment, almost literally, focusing on his defense, as he's done in recent years when he struggled offensively in the playoffs, blocks what could be the winning shot. And then even has the presence of mind when Dort tries to throw it off him, so it goes out of bounds off Harden, has the presence of mind to completely make a miss, jumps over the ball. That was a clutch play by James Harden. And yes, he had a very bad Game 7. It would have been humiliating had he lost. However, he's been great for the rest of the series. And I don't care if you had a bad game. If you save the game and your team wins with a play like that, it's clutch. He came up with an incredibly clutch and all-time great defensive play when they needed him most. It saved the Rockets' season. It saved James Harden's reputation. 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776. Meantime, as the refs decide Game 2 of a Bucks-Heat series that maybe could be 1-1 right now and even more interesting, where's this Scottie Pippen tweet? Okay, here it is. Richard Jefferson tweeted about Giannis Antetokounmpo. Giannis might be a Pippen. There, I said it. He needs his Jordan. Pippen responded, I'm not Giannis. I don't have back-to-back league MVPs. He will in a matter of days, and he's not me. The question is, who are you as a player? Richard Jefferson was a very good player. Pippen was a very great player. Giannis is awesome. God, I love these beefs. But the point is, I'm going to tell everyone what to think as usual. Okay, are you ready for your opinion? I'm about to give it to you. Giannis is not Pippen. He doesn't need a Jordan. Giannis is Shaq. Now, the difference is, Shaq and that era lent itself to his, to like, you could post up, and if you were a beast, there's nothing they could do. Shaq was going to put up his numbers in the playoffs regardless. But Giannis is like Shaq in the sense that he's a big, really. Just because he can handle and all that stuff for a big and shoot for a big and look like a wing because he can defend in space, he really offensively is more of a big than a wing. So it's not that he's Pippen and he needs his Jordan. No. Giannis is Shaq and he needs his Kobe. Do you know how gangster it is to win a championship in the NBA? The reason LeBron stacked the deck with the big three is because when you hear, we think we're going to be very competitive this year, that means is you ain't going to win no championships. You'll be on a second-round treadmill. Anytime I hear, we're going to be very competitive, second-round treadmill, if you're lucky. It's a pretty good team. The kind of teams that win championships, every now and then a Detroit Pistons all-time great defensive team can sneak in, or a Dallas Mavericks all-time great shooting team can sneak in. But by and large, the kind of teams that win championships, when you look at the roster, you go, that's unfair. That's an unfair roster. Because let me tell you something, there's another team in the other conference with an unfair roster, and you're going to have to beat them. Go look at those Lakers rosters in the 80s. What? And they had him? And they had him? Same thing with the Celtics. Same thing with the Sixers that won it all back then. Look at the... So LeBron put together the big three. Wait, you and Wade and Bosch? And then Miller and guys like that started joining the team. They didn't win the chip that year. They lost. Now, Kevin Durant joined the 73-win team. At that point, it's over. Nothing you can do. That's ridiculous. That's why he doesn't get full credit for those chips. But the reason I bring all that up is Shaquille O'Neal, maybe he wasn't in his prime. I'd say he was young enough you could say he was in his prime. The stats say he was in his prime, and even if he got a little wiser when he got a little older, he was an unstoppable force, it seemed, on the Orlando Magic. He had a prime Penny Hardaway. Nick Anderson, all these Horace Grant, they had guys who could ball on that team. He got swept in the finals by Hakeem. He got swept by the Bulls with Jordan and Pippen. Oh, but they beat the Bulls with Jordan and Pippen the year before. No, Jordan came back, played like 17 games, didn't have his legs, and the Magic beat them. That wasn't true. As soon as the Jordan was at full strength, he disposed of them. Four games, sweep. It wasn't because Shaq wasn't great enough. Honestly, it's because Penny wasn't. Penny was a great player. But it's so gangster in the NBA, you need Shaq and a dude just as good as him who's not a big. Penny doesn't do it. Kobe does it. You need Shaq and Kobe. And they were lucky to win three in a row. Only one of those years were they dominant without any close calls in the playoffs. They got lucky against the Kings that season. Come on, guys. We all know what it is. It is hard to win the championship. And then later on, he needed a prime Dwayne Wade, who was the next thing to Kobe. And a future Hall of Famer, an all-time great two-way player. It is gangster to win a championship in the NBA. Shaq needed Kobe Bryant to win. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar won six chips. One of them with Oscar Robertson. Nothing until they got Oscar Robertson. Then they won one. And then five with Magic Johnson. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the best who ever did it, needed Oscar Robertson and Magic Johnson. Shaq needed Kobe Bryant and Dwayne Wade. Giannis doesn't need Pippen. Giannis needs Kobe. Sorry, doesn't need Jordan. He's not Pippen. Giannis needs Kobe Bryant. Giannis needs an all-time great player who's not a big to pair with him. That's what it takes.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, and Sirius XM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. Dude, what is this? Late night, easy listening, Raj? What kind of tracks are you laying down here? Raj, what instrument do you play?
I play the bass guitar, man. How dare you
ask
that?
That's why you play this right now.
Yeah.
And what instrument was your son playing?
Piano.
Right. I remember at one point that was the only way he could find to spend time with you. He started playing instruments because otherwise you were too involved in fantasy sports and your bass guitar. And he was thinking, Dad, what if I played an instrument? Would you love me then?
Why are you bringing up old stuff?
How old? By the way, he's got to be grown by now.
No, 16.
All right. So, that's pretty grown.
Yeah. Yeah,
my eldest is only 11, and right. I can't believe where the time goes. Did I tell you that the Max Kellerman show's on ESPN Radio and all that stuff? Well, it is. It's on ESPN Radio. Also, ESPN News. And by the way, the ESPN app and Sirius XM Channel 80 and on your smart speaker. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. And the Max Kellerman Show is brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life. Winston in Tampa, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hi. I wanted to speak to you about hiring of
Boy,
Nash.
This is off to a rip-roaring start. Hey, like Winston, let's try this again. But tell me what's on your mind.
What you said this morning, the discussion with Steve Nay and RJ.
Yes.
You and RJ were correct in mentioning to Steve Nay that the two words that he used, white pleasure, had absolutely nothing to do with his hiring. You mentioned that it had a
white privilege
relationship. Right. It was a relationship, but not white privilege in this case. Stephen A is correct.
Yeah, I would say this. You say Stephen A is correct about what now? Okay. I would say this. Thank you for the call, Winston. I would say that there is such a thing as white privilege. I would never give up that privilege. Because usually what white privilege means is you get treated like a human being and you insist on dignity in the way you're treated and your own personal, you know, your own human dignity. And I don't think that's something that any group should say, okay, I'm going to give that up. I would insist that everyone is treated with basic human dignity. And that if that's a privilege, that should be extended to everyone. And Stephen A. and I get into this on the radio on First Take sometimes because, you know, he'll point to the process, for example, in Philadelphia. And I'll say, hey, the process was working. And then they blew it up because it was working. And Stephen A. will say, don't start me. It's like, and basically points to white privilege because a black coach or GM, rather, he said, would never be given 5 years. Hey, here's all this rope, 5 years to do whatever you want. And my point is, well, look. If race is a handicap in terms of using all the tools at your disposal to make the best possible team, then I wouldn't suggest that we admonish white GMs not to do it. I'd say that that privilege, if it's such, should be extended to all GMs. Stephen A. is talking about how it is. I'm talking about how I'd like it to be. Now, as it relates to Steve Nash, I don't see that as privilege. I see it as a relationship, as Winston points out, between Steve Nash and KD. KD was very impressed with Steve Nash's basketball mind. And it's KD's team now. And in terms of the fit, in terms of the other star on the team, Kyrie Irving, who doesn't have the greatest reputation as a locker room guy. Steve Nash has a very good reputation in that regard. And Kyrie, if you want to criticize his actual basketball play, the ball sticks with him a bunch. You know, he maybe over dribbles. You could probably say the same thing about Steve Nash. Could relate to each other. They got handles. They could shoot. They could pass. Kyrie's even more skilled than Steve Nash was. But maybe Nash can, you know, help impart some of the wisdom in terms of how to best deploy those skills and also how to get along and lead teammates. That's something that Kyrie has not yet done, is lead a group of guys to a championship. Rich in Queens, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max, big fan of the First Take and your radio show.
Yes.
I guess get your take on the upcoming series with the Rockets and the Lakers. I know it seems like the favorite seems to be LeBron and AD, but if you look at the regular season, especially when the Rockets have been going small ball, they defeated the Lakers twice, and it seems like everyone is getting caught up with the Lakers having a gentleman sweep with the Blazers, even though the Blazers' defense is like deplorable. And then you also look at the fact that James Harden has played two bad games in the Oklahoma City Thunder series. Game 2, where the bench actually saved him, and the Game 7, where he just made one good play, which was that defensive block against Dort, who was like shooting lights.
And they were able to beat a good team. You're right. Look, this is what I'll say. The Rockets are very live to beat the Lakers. And the reason is the Lakers used all their resources bringing AD in. They have nothing left. So it's just LeBron and AD, really, and a bunch of guys. Now, They cleared cap space. They wanted to spend it on Kawhi. Kawhi spurned the offer to compete against them with the Clippers because Kawhi is that dude. And then they spent where they could, and they did a good job. You know, like, guys overperformed, like Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee were the best versions of what they might have been. Danny Green is underperformed, but I have confidence Danny Green's going to be very solid. But when you look at the Rockets, as you point out, it's not just the two superstars, Westbrook and Harden, or Harden and Westbrook in that order nowadays. You look at guys like Eric Gordon or P.J. Tucker or Covington, or how about Daniel House? They have athletes who can play defense and shoot and attack off the dribble. And they have a better supporting cast than the Lakers. So yes, LeBron and AD are better than Harden and Westbrook. But how much better? Better enough to make up for the supporting cast? We're going to find out.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
I'm going to get into Kirk Cousins. There's another topic I've been meaning to talk about. I'm going to talk about it today as it relates to the NBA social justice message and how it may or may not be at odds with some of the owners in the NBA, some of the corporate sponsors of the NBA. But first, Casey Joyner, the football scientist, Casey Joyner, joins us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Casey, you there?
I am here.
Long time, Casey.
Definitely a long time. Far too long. It's been a while. I've been watching you on the air and all that, and it's been great to see everything you've been doing.
Yes. Yes, it has been. And let me just say, the same thing is going to happen on this show that happened in New York and then L.A. We're taking over everything, Casey. And so you're very fortunate to be a part of this show right now. And everyone is very fortunate to be listening to Casey right now, because he's going to break down fantasy value for you, starting with Casey, you know, those running backs, those bell cows. That's how you're going to, you know, make that money in fantasy. Leonard Fournette signs real cheap deal, one-year deal with the Bucks. Is that backfield too crowded? Is he? Where does he figure into this whole fantasy world?
I've got a metric called good blocking yards per attempt that measures how productive a back is, and you give him quality run blocking. The thing about Fournette is in 2019, he tied for fourth in the league in that category. 2018, he's dead last. So he's very much a boomer bust prospect. I don't think Tampa's going to say he's going to be our guy. I think he and Jones will split eventually the two-down role, because right now they're saying Rojo's going to be the guy. But I think they're going to split the two-down role. But, yeah, I do think it's a very crowded backfield, because they're not going to let go of Ogunbowale, and yet McCoy's going to be the third-down back, so you're going to have four backs splitting the carries. I've got Jones and Fournette both as RB3s right now. Whoever gets that job, if they become the lead back, is an RB2, but there's just not enough carries to go around, especially since Tom Brady last year, James Winston last year was second in the league in passes thrown at or inside the 10-yard line. You're going to get the same thing from Tom Brady. They're going to throw the ball a bunch near the goal line. So I don't think there's going to be a goal line back value for either of those guys either.
So you can't rack up those points with the touchdowns. Meantime, you know what bothers me about a guy like Fournette in a fantasy draft? It's like the winner of the league could easily take Fournette and your starting running back gets hurt. And there'll be a couple of games where he has a big game and they plug him in. He happens to have the big game while their RB1 is hurt, let's say. And they somehow wound up winning that week. That really annoys me. Alvin Kamara, are you concerned about the holdout for a fantasy impact?
I'm not really too concerned about it. He's never going to be a guy who's going to be a bell cow anyway, but New Orleans wants to run the ball a ton. In fact, I'll mention that because also, in addition to Kamara, you've got Latavius Murray. Latavius Murray's a guy who should be an RB2, and he's being undervalued in a lot of fantasy drafts, so really like him because they're going to go run heavy on that team as much as they can. They don't want Drew Brees throwing the ball more than maybe 525 times, but Kamara last year, he was 12th in that good blocking yards per attempt category despite battling a bad ankle, and then that shows you how good he is. He gets injured in week 6, and he can still be almost a top 10 back in that breakaway metric that I have, and now he's going to be healthy this year. Even if he only gets 250 carries and 50 passes, with that kind of breakaway capacity, he's still probably, you know, among the top 5 running backs in fantasy football. He's not going to be above Zeke or CMC or Barkley. He's not going to be that guy, but he's going to be in the top of the next tier. So I don't worry about it, because even if he doesn't get quite as many carries, he still get 250 to 300, and he'll be number 5 on the RB chart.
You think Taysom Hill will be used enough in any capacity to have value?
Not in fantasy, he won't. It's just not going to be. I just can't see. If you're not even going to get 100 scrimmage plays, I just can't see you being on a fantasy roster unless you're in a very deep league. I love him in Dynasty, though. I would definitely want to get him in Dynasty and stash him in once he can get more playing time.
Zeke or Saquon, if you had to choose for fantasy this upcoming season?
Saquon would be the guy I'd go with because in his first year, I mentioned that good blocking yards per attempt metric, he leads the league in that category in that season. Last year, he drops down like 8.5 yards. It's a good total, but not a great total because he was battling an injury. But the Giants' offensive line was fourth in good blocking rate, the percentage of times they give their ball carriers quality run blocking. If they do that this year and Barkley's healthy and gets back to what he was in 2018 from a breakaway metric, if you combine those two things together, 2,500 is the ceiling for him as far as scrimmage yards. There aren't too many backs. I mean, he and CMC are about the only guys who can do that, and I just don't see Zeke quite being to that level because Dallas is probably going to pass the ball more than they've had to CeeDee Lamb, so I'd go Barkley.
And do you think Garrett, who leaned on Zeke, will lean on Saquon in this offense?
I think he will. I think that they'll... I don't know if he'll lean in quite as much in the passing game. I think he probably wants to, they threw a lot to him last year, and I think they'll probably spread the ball out a bit more. They had to throw more passes to him because everybody was injured, but with the receiving core that they have with Ingram, you've got enough pass catchers where you don't have to have him do that. So I think he probably doesn't get quite as many receptions, but as far as carries go, yeah, he'll be 300-plus.
Who's going to be the better fantasy quarterback this year, Cam or Brady?
Brady, because Cam is going to, they'll run the ball some there, but that, and he'll get his carries there, and Newton or Belichick's not going to let Newton not get that kind of production there. But with Brady, he's got so many fantastic targets. His schedule is very, very strong. And plus, they do well in a metric I have called fireworks points, measures how often you're going to get into a high-scoring matchup, the likelihood that you will. Tampa Bay's near the top of the league in that category. So a lot of high-scoring games, a lot of passes. And again, they will throw the ball at or inside the 10-yard line. You'll see Brady get maybe 45 passes at or inside the 10. You add that all together, he'll get 30 touchdowns, 4,000 yards. And I think it's just going to be higher upside and more consistent than Cam.
Casey Joyner, the football scientist, really appreciate you coming on. Before I let you go, is Todd Gurley done or does he bounce back this year?
It'll be a tale of two seasons. They're going to use him heavily early in the season because they know he's only got so much wear and tear left on that knee. They will use him a ton. But if I'm drafting him, I want to get either Ito Smith or Brian Hill. I probably want Hill, but I can pick either one of them to spell him later in the year because I have a feeling that he's not going to be a guy who's going to be a bell cow for 16 games or maybe for 8.
But you're right. Like, to say nothing of the fact they ain't playing no 17 games this year. They'll be lucky. They'll be lucky to get 5 games in with COVID. Anyway, the great Casey Joyner, ladies and gentlemen. Remember to check him out here on the Max Kellerman Show for all your fantasy advice. Casey, really appreciate it, brother. Talk to you soon.
Sounds great. Thank you, man.
You heard what Kirk Cousins had to say about COVID-19 by now, right? Roundly criticized. Had to clarify what he meant. I'll tell you what I think coming up.
You heard First Take?
At least it's good to hear your voice finally, because I know on First Take, I only hear you on the intro and outro.
Now hear Max's Last Take.
So Kirk Cousins was asked about COVID and how he feels about that, and he said that if he dies, he dies. And there was a bit of an uproar about that. And then he clarified and said, look, I want to be respectful of everyone, wear a mask, social distance, wash your hands. I was just talking about the way I feel about it myself. Okay, let me give you my feeling about this. Kirk Cousins never struck me as the sharpest knife in the drawer. I don't think he's a rocket scientist. But he has struck me as a decent guy. And for me, it's more important that your character than your brain. I don't think it was a very smart thing for him to say. But, I remember when Michael Sam was the first openly gay NFL player, came into the league. Some people were using faith as a reason why they didn't think it was right. Christian faith. And making all kinds of comments about his sexual orientation, Michael Sam's, and why it wasn't good, and it was like a sin. And I remember Kirk Cousins at the time saying, pointing to some of the best stuff and teachings in the New Testament, and talking about, look, even if you think it's a sin, Jesus loved the sinners, that sort of thing. And you know, Cousins strikes me as a man who takes his faith very seriously, and maybe actually turns to that too often, and it replaces thinking into independent thinking, where he goes immediately to faith and looks for the gospel. And yet, I'm a secular person, but I'm not religious. But if you just substitute in your own mind, as you're judging these things, his faith in God is to me, I believe it to him, it seems to me, is the same as faith in good. And so, because we know, like, in the name of faith and religion, people have done all kinds of good things and all kinds of bad things. It depends on the way the individual uses it. And it seems to me that the way Kirk Cousins does is to lean on the best kind of teachings in his faith to make himself a good person. And there are certain tip-offs that he used in his phrasing when he said, "If I die, I die." He was talking about survival of the fittest. And then my ears prick up because I go, wait a minute. Trump has politicized a global pandemic in which hundreds of thousands of Americans have now died. We have the worst handling of it in the world, in the industrialized democratic world. He's suppressed information out of the CDC and made it harder for them to do their jobs. And he's tried to put political people in the place of health experts and officials. Medical experts. And one of the insane theories floating around the White House now reportedly is, let's go for herd immunity. Now, herd immunity means when a certain percentage of the population gets a disease, then you build antibodies and now everyone can go back to their daily lives. Of course, number one, they found that the antibodies for COVID are weak and they last 3 to 6 months and you can get it again. But more importantly, Sweden tried this. They figured the economic impact is too great and the disease is not bad enough where we should suffer that economic. Let's go for herd immunity. And what wound up happening is they got a little economic boost at first. And then, of course, the virus came roaring back and worse than before. And then they had to shut down their economy anyway. So they didn't see any economic benefits in the long run compared to their neighbors. However, they were much sicker than their neighbors. So if you want worse medical outcome and zero economic benefit, then do what Sweden did. So when I hear Kirk Cousins talk about survival of the fittest, I hear those kind of talking points. I think, is this political? And I think other people did too. And I think that's why it started getting some momentum in the news cycle. Like, wait, did you hear what Kirk Cousins said? And then he had to clarify. He said, no, I'm talking about myself. I respect everyone else. I want to keep everyone healthy. But that's the thing, Kirk. And this is where I think, like, sometimes you can do a little more independent thinking instead of immediately leaning on, well, I have faith that I'll be okay. And if I die, I'll still be okay because I'm religious. And it's not about you. And people have to get through this through their head. What about the kids on campus and they're going to get sick? Or the NFL players, their safety is the most important thing. No, it's not. It's not about you. Wearing a mask is about not spreading it to others. It's actually a selfless act. It is the way people need in this moment to be selfless for greater societal good. Now, eventually that comes back and helps you, the individual, because we can get back to normal or some semblance of normal if we crush the curve. But it's really about keeping the most vulnerable among us safe, the elderly, those with underlying conditions. My takeaway is Kirk Cousins is someone who leans on his faith to be a good person, to be the best person he knows how to be. And that's always okay in my book. But maybe he should have been clearer about the importance of taking precautions to safeguard the health of others. All right, and eventually he did. He cleared that up too. I want to quickly get into this. Judd at Popular Information is a Twitter account I follow. I actually subscribe to his newsletter, Judd Legum. And he had an interesting item today about NBA players, what they stood for, and the social justice movement, and how some of the NBA's top corporate sponsors have donated $3.3 million over the last 2 years to support the re-election of members of Congress who received an F rating by the NAACP. So this is not partisan by nature. It may wind up being partisan, of course, but you get an F rating by the NAACP. Why are the league sponsors donating to those groups? I'm going to get into it more tomorrow on the Max Kellerman Show here on ESPN Radio. Chiney and Golic Jr. coming up right now. See you tomorrow.